So there's a fundamental machlokas, Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Elazar. It doesn't at first look like it's fundamental, but as we began to discover yesterday, it is incredibly yesodistic. Machlokas, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Elazar, how do you understand the pasuk in Chumash, in Parshas Kiseitse, v'chastav la sefer krisos v'nasam v'yada? You could cast the machlokas as how do you translate the word v'chastav. Meir, who says Eidi Chasima Karasi, or let's start Rabbi Elazar, who says Eidi Masira Karasi, he says V'chasav means to write the get, to write the shtar kiddin. And Rabbi Meir says no, V'chasav actually means to sign the shtar kiddin. So what does the word V'chasav mean? The Belazar, who says Eidei Mesir Karsi, says V'chasav means Ksima. The Meir says no, V'chasav means Chasim. Which is why the Meir actually says you need Chasima. You need Chasima l'shema. V'chasav lach sefer krisos means you have to sign the get l'shem ha'ish, l'shem ha'isha, and so on and so forth. Whereas Rabbi Elazar says, no. It means ksiva l'shma. Because as a matter of fact, lo nechtam, let's say, wasn't signed at all. It doesn't have signatures. So Rabbi Meir says it's totally nothing. It doesn't have signatures. It's a garnish. Rabbi Elazar says, no, it's kosher. I mean, not Torah. Midrabanan, you require a signature. But fundamentally, a get does not require signatures in order to be valid. Hayitachi. Whoever heard of an unsigned shtar? Well, what's that worth? Just a piece of paper. It doesn't prove anything. And we saw other examples of this. Let's say it's ksav sheyachol lehiz dayev, such as pencil. Right? The text of the shtar itself is forgeable, is changeable. You wrote a shtar and pencil. So, well, what is that worth? Nothing. You wrote a shtar and pencil. Imagine you wrote a check in pencil or an erasable ink. Anyone can change the numbers. So why would the bank honor, if I present the bank with a check, that someone gave me a check you wrote in pencil, why would the bank honor that? How do they know that the number that appears in the check is the original number that the maker of the check, that the writer of the check wrote? So Rebbeir says, "Hiksav shechel is daif, it's a zero." And Rebbeir says, "No, taka kosher is going to work. Hiksav shechel is daif. Hiksav shechel is daif. How could that be? How could that be?" And here's another example. Eino muchach mitocha. It's not 100% clear from the shtar what it's referring to. So Meir says, it doesn't tell you anything. The shtar doesn't communicate anything. Rabbi Elazar says, at least fundamentally, it's kosher. And it's kosher. What does it?
What's the last word?
It's not, the shtar itself is ambiguous. The shtar itself doesn't make clear exactly what it's referring to. So what does that do for you? The lechora, nothing. So as we discussed yesterday, what the way the Rav wove all these bits and pieces into a single coherent whole, and no pun intended, if you want to see the Biksav, you can take a look in our chapters in his first Sefer Eretz Hatzvi. Simon Chaf Gimel is one of the four pieces, there are 40 simanim in Eretz Hatzvi. Four of them are called kuntres. Simon Chav Gimel is the Kuntres Be'inyan Shtaris. Kuntres means that this was he had produced at one point essays that were tapestries woven from the Rav Shiurim on a sugya over the years. So he put together Rav Shiurim and different sections into a single sugya, into a single coherent whole. So he did that in four different areas. One of them is Shtaris. So Kuntres Be'inyan Shtaris.
drawing from years of Rav Shurim, coherent approach to Shtar. So Simon Chav Gimel, Os Hey, he develops and presents the Rav's approach to this machlokas, whether Eide Chasima Karasi or Eide Masir Karasi. He said what emerges from this is here's the bottom line. What emerges from all this is what's the relationship between a shtar kinyan and a shtar raya? In other words, the mayor makes a incontrovertible point, the point that you cannot argue with, which is that if a shtar doesn't have signatures, if a shtar is written in pencil, if a shtar is not muchach mitocho, it clearly doesn't prove anything. Rabbi Elazar is going to have to agree to that. Also, the Gemara in fact says he does agree to that. Of course, if you're talking about having a shtar that can actually prove something subsequently, everyone's going to agree that that the bank should not honor a check written in pencil. Of course. How does the bank know what the original number was? Of course, if it's written in pencil, if it's not signed, a check is not signed, the bank's going to honor a check. Of course not. Why? Because it doesn't prove anything to the bank. The bank, if I'm the recipient of the check, my bank wants to know what did the maker, the writer of the check, have in mind. They want to, did he actually make out this check? Was it from him? Or did they just steal one of his checks? And what number did he originally write? So if it's not signed, or if it's written in pencil, or if it's not clear who he made the check out to, so then... The last one was a little more complicated, but we'll take that for now as an example of not moving the tovah. Of course it doesn't prove anything. Of course the bank is not going to honor a check that unless it's in ink, clear, and signed. Because without those three elements, it's not a shtar raya. It's not a shtar that can prove anything subsequently. So Rabbi Meir said there's only one type shtar. There's only one type of shtar. There's a shtar of raya, a shtar that proves. If it doesn't prove anything, then it's nothing. And what's Rabbi Elazar saying? He's saying no. There are two types of shtars. There's a shtar of raya, and there's also a shtar of kinyan. If you want to prove something, subsequently, in Beis Din, of course, I want to use the shtar to prove that the guy owes me money. If I want to use the shtar to prove that I bought the field. If I want to use the shtar to, if a woman wants to use the shtar to prove that she's married, that she's divorced, and so on and so forth, of course there has to be a proper shtar raya. And if it doesn't, if it's not signed, if it's not in indelible ink, if it's not clear, of course it's not going to be a valid shtar raya. But, Rabbi Elazar says, for kinyan shtar, you don't need a shtar raya. To make the facts happen, this sort of takes us back to the very first day of Shir, remember the opening mitzvah, the Blazer says that you can do a kinyan shtar without a shtar raya. I can, if I give you, if I write a piece of paper that I'm giving you my field as a gift, and I hand you the piece of paper, perhaps in front of Eide Masira, perhaps, so now the field is yours. That was a valid kinyan shtar. Who owns the field in truth? You. If you're going to want to prove it later, that piece of paper written with pencil with no signatures obviously isn't going to get you very far. But it's often the case in halakha. There are plenty of things that happen and are true, even though you might not be able to prove them. For instance, practical example. You're in a parking lot. This is an assignment that some people have. You're backing out of this spot in the parking lot. Quick show of hands. How many people here have at least a permit? Okay. How many people here have a license? How many people here actually have access to a car? Okay. So you're pulling out of a parking lot. But he said, this is mamish halacha l'maisa. This is not l'fnim ashur sadin. This is mamish basic Judaism. Halacha l'maisa me'ikra adin. You're pulling out of a parking spot. And you're still getting your sea legs, still getting used to sort of the physics of how the car moves when you're in reverse, and the wheel is turned a little bit, and how to use the mirrors, and you accidentally nick the guy next to you as you're putting out the parking spot.
You didn't mean it. You weren't trying to do anything bad. You had no malicious intent. And Baruch Hashem, it was low speed. Hopefully you're putting out your parking spot at low speed. So you didn't make a lot of damage. Basic physics there. Okay. Momentum is M times V. Your V was low. There wasn't too much to transfer momentum to the car next to you. So it's not the terrible damage, but you nicked the guy's car. There's a bit of a dent. There's some paint scraped off. What do you do? Well, for her, what are you supposed to do? No one saw it. There were no agents. Assuming that's the case. Maybe there's a security camera. Maybe there's a dash cam. Okay. No agent. No one's, no human, no other human being saw other than you. What are you supposed to do? You owe the guy money. Because you were mazik him. You're Adam HaMazik. Adam Mu'el Li'olam. Even though you didn't mean to, you were trying not to, you are chayav to pay the guy's damage. That's what you're supposed to do. Now, how are you going to do that? You don't know who the guy is. So what you're supposed to do is take a little piece of paper. You are going to need an actual piece of paper and a pen. It'd be hard to do this with this electronically. Take a piece of paper and a pen and do two things. Number one, take pictures. And number two, you write the guy a note. Sorry, I made a slight dent on the car. Make sure that you don't allow room for him to exaggerate. I made a small dent in your car. If you want to do so, if you want me to cover the damage, here's my number. Make sure to take pictures also, because you don't want to be taken for a ride by a guy who decides that you must have made a big dent in his car that you didn't make. Make sure to take pictures so you can show what actually happened. If you caused $200 worth of damage to the car next to you, you're mechuyav to pay. The guy may say, I don't care. Okay, that's up to him, Timocha. Or he may say, thank you. I'm actually going to have, it's a lease. I care about the little dent. I'm going to have it fixed and I'll give you the bill. Okay, you're talking to the bank. That's Bava Kama 101. This is Parshas Emor. Maka nefesh b'hem yishal mena. You're Adam Azik, you got to pay. I, no one saw. You still have to pay if no one saw. So the answer is, of course. Of course. Can the guy prove that you have to pay if no one saw, if you don't have to aid him? No. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu is mechayev you. The chi of nezek is independent, is created when you're mazik, whether or not it was witnessed, whether or not it was proven. So if he needs to prove it, he's going to need proof. But the truth is, yes, you owe money even if no one was watching. Or I buy a bag of potato chips. And I walk off with it. Or even better, I buy a piece of karka. With what kinyan? Kinyan kesef. I gave you money, and I paid you for it, and the karka is mine. Or kinyan chazaka. Lei chazeku kni. We made an agreement that I'm going to buy your karka, or you're going to give me the karka as a gift. Either way, what's the kinyan? So you tell me, go install a hook, go install a door, do a kinyan chazkas kinyan, make a tikkun in the karka, and the karka is yours. Gevaldik. Is the karka mine? Yes. Can I prove it? Not unless they're Adam. If you deny that I ever paid you, if you deny that I ever did a kinyan chazaka, I'm going to lose in Beis Din. The truth is, it is mine. I just can't prove it. So if you're an honest person, which God expects you to be, so you will freely admit, and if you're an honest person and you have a working memory, so you will say, yes, in the Hanami. We did a kinyan and the karka is yours. For better and for worse, the karka is yours. That's the truth, is the kinyan worked. Is it provable? Not necessarily. So if people aren't being honest, or if people do really forget, so then you're going to need proof. But the truth is the thing, the event happened, even if it's not provable. This is not Heisenberg, this is not quantum mechanics. Halachic changes do occur even when they're not observed. But the point is, just because something isn't provable doesn't mean it's not true. And when people are honest and have good memories, they will follow through on what happened, even if no one can prove it. So Rabbi Lezer says, what does it matter whether the shtar is a valid raya or not? I mean, of course it matters if you need to prove, but in terms of just making the kinyan, creating the facts, I gave you a shtar, even if it was written in pencil, even if it wasn't signed, even if it's ambiguous, I gave you a shtar, the shtar kinyan happened. Just like if there was a transfer of kesef, or if there was a kinyan chazaka, the kinyan happened. Can you prove it later? Not unless we have valid edus. But it is true that the thing happened. As an aside,
We may come back to this later in the year. There are cases where you need Edom to make the thing happen. Under the chuppah, if there, the Gemara tells us, Kiddush Nisam L'Chavav, I believe, that if a boy gives a girl a ring and says, Erei Mekudeshesli, and no one is watching, so and that's a rare case where without Edom, the kinyan didn't even occur. That's a special rule of Edus L'Kiyum Hadavar. Kiddush is one of the fewer areas of halacha where if it wasn't witnessed, it doesn't count. Even if both the boy and girl come in to say, yes, he gave her a ring, he said Erei Mekudeshesli, the Beis Din will say, it doesn't matter. If it wasn't witnessed, we believe you that you went through with the maaseh, but it didn't have impact because by kiddushin, a few areas of halacha where the edus is actually a condition for the kinyan to occur. So just as if the ring wasn't the shavapruta, giving the ring didn't help because it has to be a shavapruta or for the kinyan kesef to work. And so too, if there wasn't edus, there weren't edus, if it wasn't a witnessed kinyan kesef, and the kiddushin didn't work. That's a rarity. Edus l'kiyam hadavar. But usually edus is l'birur hadavar. Let's just put those terms on the board. The guy turns to know. Edus l'kiyam hadavar, that's rare. That's what you have under chuppah. Edus l'birur hadavar. To validate, to authenticate what happened, not to authenticate, but to verify what happened, to tell me after, to figure out what happened, to prove what happened, that's your typical type of thing. So Reb Elazar says, even if the shtar doesn't improve anything, okay, but it's still, it was a valid kinyan shtar. As long as everyone agrees to what happened, it worked. Rabbi Meir says, no. If I say, I freely admit that I gave you a shtar, written in pencil, with no agent, no signatures, and I gave you a shtar that said that I'm giving you my field as a gift. So the mayor would say, I can freely admit that I'm based in, and the field is still mine, because that wasn't a valid Maisa Kinyan. Just like if you give a ring, but it's not a Shavar Pruta, that's not a valid Kinyan Kesef, because part of the definition of Maisa Kinyan Kesef is Shavar Pruta. Rabbi Meir says, if you give a shtar, it's not a shtar raya, that's, you didn't give a shtar. What do you mean? I wrote it down on a piece of paper. What that means is, the mayor says there's only one type of shtar, because the definition of kinyan shtar, for Rabbi Meir, Eidei Chasim Akarsi, the definition of kinyan shtar is, what does it mean to give a shtar? It means to give you proof. Hasfasas raya, giving you possession over, giving you proof that the field is yours, makes the field yours. Cycle. And that's the chiddush for Rabbi Meir of the chas of law sefer krisus. That if I give you written proof to an event, then that makes the event. I give you written proof to a change of status, that creates. Giving you the proof makes the fact true. That's what Rabbi Meir says. So the whole idea for a mayor of Kinyan Kesef is giving you a raya. There's only one type of shtar, and it is shtar raya. If I give you a shtar raya, that makes it true, and once you have a shtar raya, you'll be able to prove that it's true subsequently. So for a mayor, there's only one type of shtar. Because Kinyan shtar means giving the guy a raya. While for Rabbi Elazar, no. Rabbi Elazar, the Maisa Kinyan of shtar doesn't have to be giving you a raya. It's expressing your das in writing. Habos das, I'm going to express. The Rambam opens Sefer Kinyan. Sefer Kinyan opens with Hilchos Mechila. So the first line. Open Halacha in Sefer Kinyan. Hilchos Mechila, Parag Av, Halacha Aleph, Ein HaMekach Nitnei B'dvar. Rambam says the first thing you have to know about Kinyanim is words alone don't cut it. This is what we started with a couple of days ago, that a kinyan always requires two elements, das kinyan and a maisa kinyan. It's not enough to want it to be yours or to say, I want this kinyan to occur. I actually have to accompany the das with some sort of action. with Kesef, with Shtar, with Chazaka, with Mashiach, da da da. So Rabbi Lazar says, you know what Shtar is? Instead of merely saying your Das, you're expressing in writing. If I just say it to you, that's one thing. If I give it to you in writing, it's a more profound, more substantial expression of what you're thinking. That's true in outside of halachic context also. Right? It's one thing to say something, other than to put it in writing. You write someone a card, you say thank you to someone, that's a nice thank you. You write someone a thank you card, it's a much deeper expression of thank you. It's not a halachic issue. Halacha demands that we be grateful people too. But there's no chalos in the halachic sense, but there's a chalos in a social sense. I say thank you, it's a little bit of a thank you. If you get a card, a written card, thank you card, that means that's a deeper thank you. So Rabbi Elazar says that natural svara has halachic implications also. If I express my das kinyan b'dvarim merely verbally, that's not enough to make a change. I tell you I want to give you a gift. I tell you this karka is yours. I tell a girl I want to marry. It's very nice, but words alone don't affect the king. But if I actually, Rabbi Elazar says, if it's not just words, but a note, I wrote in a note, this karka is yours, here you go, or I write in a note to a girl, I hereby marry you, and I give it to her, that's a kinyan shtar. That's a shtar mechira. That's a shtar kiddushin. If I express my das b'ksav, that's much more das than merely saying it. And that's enough das to actually flip the switch, to actually create, to effect the status change. So that's, again, what we've arrived at is really, this is the most fundamental level. What is kinyan shtar? Is kinyan shtar, as Rabbi Elazar says, simply expressing my das more powerfully? Instead of just saying it, words are cheap. I'm actually going to give it to you in a note. It's expressing my das b'ksav. Or Rabbi Meir says, no, it's actually giving the person a raya. So that's why Rabbi Elazar says, shtar kinyan does not have to be a shtar raya. It just has to be a note. When I give you a thank you note, it doesn't have to be provable. It just has to be in writing instead of mere words. So a shtar kinyan won't necessarily work as a raya. Rabbi Elazar says, therefore, that if I have a shtar that's written in pencil, yachal is daif. I have a shtar that wasn't signed. I have a shtar that's not muchach mitocho. It's not clear. So Rabbi Elazar says, you gave the guy a note, you expressed the guy, the girl, whatever the situation may be, I gave the other party my das b'ksav, it was a valid kinyan. Can I prove it later? This alone will not prove it. The Eidei Mesira, I can bring it. If I can find the Eidei Mesira, I'll bring the Eidei Mesira. Or if both parties agree to what happened, there's no need for proof. But in those situations when things are on the rocks, and not everyone is coming to the table, and no one is doing what they're supposed to do, and one party claims this, other party claims that, and it's been 5 years and the Eidei Mesira are no longer available, so your shtar kinyan worked to make the kinyan, but it's not going to help you subsequently to prove that the kinyan occurred. So Rabbi Elazar says, yes, as a practical matter, it may often be wise to make sure that you use a fully qualified shtar kinyan, a shtar raya for your kinyan, so that way that piece of paper can have two functions. In the moment, it's a shtar kinyan, and for years later, it's a shtar raya. But Rabbi Elazar says fundamentally, and again, by get, maybe there's a kandra banan, you have to have chasima for that reason, but fundamentally, Rabbi Elazar says, they're two separate things. Shtar kinyan makes it happen, shtar raya proves that it happened. Sometimes you want one, sometimes you want the other. Sometimes you like one shtar to do both, but they're fundamentally different functions, and they have different rules. Shtar raya doesn't have to be provable. And that's why, working all the way back up to the psukim, Rabbi Elazar said, look, get what type of shtar, what type of function is the Torah describing in Kisei? The chastav law say for Kisei is v'nasam b'yadah. That's a shtar serving which function? Kinyan or raya?
Right.
In the context, the Chumash says a couple is married, and they're going to get divorced. And the husband gives his erstwhile wife a shtar, sefer krisos, that severs the marriage, that affects divorce. What function is that shtar playing? Kinyan or right? Is it making things happen, or is it proving? Is it Torah describing making things happen, or proving that it happened? Making things happen, right? Now, again, if you have a shtar, the Torah doesn't say this. It may be true that if she holds on to the get, perhaps it can serve as a right subsequently. Maybe the Torah doesn't address that directly. The pasuk in Chumash is talking clearly about the kinyan. They were married. Now they're no longer married. Why? Because there was a mesiras haget. So that the Torah, the event, the moment that the Torah is presenting is a moment of king. The husband is using the shtar as an instrument, not as proof, as an instrument. It's an instrumental shtar. It's a shtar king. So Rabbi Elazar says, v'chasav obviously means merely writing the shtar. It doesn't even have to be signed min ha-Torah in order to be valid. Maybe midrabanan we require signatures. Okay, then they take an olam. Chazal said it would be wise, and therefore we're mandating that a get be able to subsequently serve as a shtaraya. Otherwise, there'd be a lot of unnecessary grief later on. There's been enough grief in the situation; we don't have to have more grief. So at least, like Chazal said, midrabanan, we want the get to also serve as a shtaraya. But fundamentally, understand the pasuk in Chumash min ha-Torah. Well, it says it doesn't have to be signed at all. So what does the chasav mean? It means writing. The husband's expressing his das b'ksav. Either he's writing himself, or he's a sofer serves as shaliach. But fundamentally, this is an expression of what the husband is, what the husband's intent is, what is das. But Reb Meir says, no! There is only one shtar. And it is a shtar rai. And kinyan shtar means to hand over a rai to the other party. So what does it mean to give for a husband to give his wife a get? The chasav say for krisos. That means to give her proof of their divorce. So then, what does the chasav mean? Merely to write? To write is nothing. Just to write it? What does that prove? The step that makes it count is the signature. Now it's a shtar. Now it's a tool to prove something. Now it's a device that can prove something because that's signatures. That's what Meir says. The chasav means chasima. And that means you have to have chasima lishma. So that's where we got to yesterday, and from there we begin today. I hope this chazara was helpful. I hope this chazara sort of put things into perspective. And again, what appears, as I said before, let's encapsulate what we spoke about so far, the deeper, broader understanding of Lezer Meir, and then we'll now take that into our sugya, to Ksubis Sayadal, and then to Bava Basra Lamed. Again, what looked as though it was just episode, I don't know, some funny detail. Whether the Mesira matter more, whether the Eidei Chasima matter more. It seems like sort of like a funny, almost awkward detail is really, the Rav pointed out, once you look at all the Gemaras, we didn't see all these Gemaras inside. Obviously, these various Nafkamim are based on different Gemaras. If you want to take a look in Eretz HaTzvich of Gimel Hay, and you'll see Maimon gets Kedai to work backwards and see the Gemaras inside. You put all the pieces together, the Rav pointed out, Eidei Mesira Karti Echsima Karasi is one way of expressing it's the tip of the iceberg. It's a far deeper, broader, it's really two understandings of what it means to do a king shtar. It's two senses of how many types of shtar are there in halacha, one or two. Is every shtar kinyan by definition a shtar, needs to be a shtar raya or not? And the melo, all these nafkaminas, flow naturally. Questions? And then we'll take this yisod into ksubas and Bava Basra. I don't remember the order, so maybe let's work from left to right. Ellie? Go ahead. Oh. Mayor. With two L's.
First of all,
you were Lazar, yeah? Rabbi Eliezer was two generations before Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Lazar was a contemporary. They're both from Rabbi Akiva's second yeshiva.
Can you technically then have to take the get that's already been given and give it again and you should be in the
According to Rabbi Eliezer, according to Rabbi Lazar, if I have a get, well, can I recycle a get?
No, because she's a problem in the beginning. Right? She's losing again.
If the Mesiras Hashtar wasn't witnessed,
yeah.
You're saying.
Or
I didn't have Eidim to the Mesiras Hashtar. Look, let's say I don't have Eidus Lakiyim HaDavar, going back to Kiddush Zalm of Rav. I don't have Eidim. The Gemara says Beferish that you need Eidus Lakiyim HaDavar in the context of Kiddushin, and almost all Rishonim assume that is true for Geirushin as well. Let's say I gave a Chassan gives a Kala a ring. And no one was watching. He was so moved. It was such an amazing date. He said, "Darling, I want to marry you now." Now, that may present various halachic problems and practical problems. It's usually, marriage is hopefully a marvelous thing. And like most marvelous things, doing things at the right pace tends to get the best results. Not too fast, not too slow. But he's so moved. They felt so close. On the spot. No one's watching. Pulls out a ring, he happens to have a wedding band in his pocket, or he doesn't. He takes a dry erase marker and says, "Darling, I read mekudeshesly with dry erase markers at." Okay, if the dry erase marker is a shavapruta, which Staples tells me that it is much more than a shavapruta. Okay, pruta is silver has been on the rise, pruta is around 3 cents. It's worth more than 3 cents. A pack of four costs you more than 12 cents. Okay, so the guy says, Chayvan Womer Lashon Rabba. The guy, he says to the girl, he gives her a lollipop, right? Because actually, the lollipop's that. So again, whether the girl is interested in accepting that type of offer, that's her call. Okay, if they both really like lollipops, so then Matzah Minas Mino, beautiful, wonderful couple. So if he wants to give her a lollipop, if she wants to accept lollipop, a lollipop was also Shavar Prusa. So then, Mikudesh is if there are Eidim watching. But let's say a taco or no Eidim watching. He gives her the dry erase marker, he gives her the lollipop, he gives her the ring. They know he's been watching. He says, "I read Mekudeshesli, whatever it is there. Kedas Moshe Yisrael." And then they come and mom's over married. And the parents are happy to hear there was a productive date, but a little more productive than they imagined. And they ask a couple of questions. It turns out, well, there are no Eidim. So they say, "Well, the din is that you're not married. Because I'm a Kadosh Ben Oleveno and Choshen Lekidushab." Can they give the ring again? Bifnei, now this ring has sentimental value, or this dry erase marker, because this is a dry erase marker we attempted to get married with the first time. So this means a lot to us. This, oh, black is so boring. This brown dry erase marker is such profound sentimental value. So they tell the Masada Kedusha, and we want to use this dry erase marker under the chuppah. So you probably look at them cross-eyed, but okay, we'll negotiate. Now, would that work to give it again? Yes, assuming that the kala has to be makna back to the chassid. Because he did give it to her. And most likely it is now her property. So kiddushin has to be, he's giving something of value that he owns to her. So he would have to be, assuming that it successfully became hers when he gave it to her first time. So if she's makna to him, it sometimes comes up in more typical situations. Messiah Kedushin does, one of the things you have to keep your eye on is to make sure the Chassan owns the ring. Because sometimes there's an heirloom ring. Usually a Chassan goes to a jeweler and for $60 buys a beautiful gold wedding band. But sometimes there's an heirloom ring in the family, which has a lot of meaning. I was at a Peter Ben recently where the father, Avia Ben, was owed to his son using coins that his, I believe, great-great-grandfather had received in the 1800s for Pinya Ben. The great-great-grandfather of the Avia Ben was a Kohen. Obviously, it's not Ben HaChaben. And these were silver dollars that dated back to the 1870s. So it's an heirloom. Okay. So he got the Avia Ben got it from his grandfather, or gotten it, I believe, from his grandfather. So that's great. You just have to make sure that the coins that the grandfather gave it as a gift to the grandson. Give up. And then he bought it back from the coin afterwards because they wanted to keep the coins in the family. That's fine. So if you have an heirloom ring for a chuppah, it's So you got to make sure, the Masar Kedusha has to make sure that the grandmother understands that she's giving the ring as a gift to her grandson. That she's not just lending it to him. If she's lending it to him, that's very problematic. Kinyan Keser requires that the Keser belong to the Chassan before he gives it to his Kal. So the same is going to be true for Shtar. Could you reuse your Shtar? Yeah, assuming that you work everything out, other issues. But yeah, in principle, you gave the Das Biksav the first time, but there were no Edim. In principle, at least, you could give it again with Edim. And you have to make sure the date is correct and so on and so forth. But in principle, yeah. Yaakov.
According to Rabbi Elazar, the expression of Das happens after the Sira?
According to Rabbi Elazar, yeah. When I hand you, the Mesira is a relaying of Das. Instead of saying it to you, I'm giving it to you.
So
the Ksiva is a preliminary step. Or Ksiva is part of it.
Shouldn't that Das have to be clear? Why shouldn't Das have to be before
it? Well, it doesn't have to be provable later. Now, in the moment, it's clear what we mean. But even if, let's say I explain. Let's say we didn't identify all the parties, for instance. Let's say we didn't put down the dates. The Mukhar Mitoch was larger sugis, and there are more details of what can or cannot be Mukhar Mitoch, and how much does context help. But at least in concept, there could be things that at the moment of the Mesira are clear, but the Ksav alone won't make clear. Yeah?
So according to Rabbi Elazar, the ownership is transferred at Mesira?
Both assume that the ownership is transferred at the Mesira. The question is, it's Mesira of what? Is it Mesira of merely a written expression of my thoughts, a written expression of my intent? Or is after more, I'm giving you proof of a certain event? But either way, it's the handing over of the shtar that is the mice, the king. Yeah. A kinyan is when I give you proof of that an event occurred, that makes the event occur. So obviously it can't be a physical event. If I give you proof that your car got dented, it doesn't make your car be dented. But if I give you proof of a halachic chalos, I give you proof that there was a certain status change, a status change that does depend on my das to make it happen. Yes, if I give you proof that to a certain status change, be it a status, personal status in the world of Yisra Hetzer, Kiddush and Gerishin, or be it financial status of the relationship between property and people, a matana, a mecher, and so on and so forth, and maybe even shtarchol, yeah. So giving you proof of a certain legal status change actually makes that change kick in.
So if you're eating with a pencil, why would that not?
No, because... okay, good. You have a demesira. No, but the point is, I'm giving you a raya. The definition of kinyan shtar for Rabbi Meir is handing you proof that something happened makes it happen. But if I have a unsigned shtar, I have a shtar and pencil, but there were a demesira watching, I didn't give you a raya. The demesira are watching, okay. But I didn't hand you proof. I didn't hand you proof. Okay. One more question. Yeah. Two more questions. Yeah.
So, is according to the mayor, if the Edim Hasima signed the document, does that actually do anything at that moment?
If the Edim Hasima signed the document, according to the mayor, they are creating the shtar. So you create the shtar and then you deploy the shtar. You create the shtar through Hasima's shtar because you're creating a raya, and then you deploy it. You utilize it when you actually hand it to the other party. So both steps are very significant. And both steps are necessary in order for the king of Shtar to be chal.
So according to Rabbi Elazar, the signing is just a practical
sense. Right. For Rabbi Elazar, if you want it to be a raya, so you'll sign it. I'll give you an example. Sometimes something can be just a Shtar raya. I'll give you an example, which is probably true. Let's say I lend you money. You ask me for a loan. You want $10,000 to help get your business off the ground. You want $100,000. You want to buy a franchise. This you think is the big breakthrough.
Someone told me recently, a rep from a different community reached out, trying to help someone in community X lend $300,000 to someone in community Y, because the fellow community Y wants to buy a franchise that he thinks will put his parnasa back on track. He wants to buy the business, he thinks it'll be a viable business, but he needs an infusion of capital initially in order to be able to buy the business. And as revenue comes in, he'll be able to repay the loan. Okay, gevaldik, a big chesed, tremendous chesed. Rambam writes that the highest level of stock enabling someone, giving someone a loan that enables him to get back on his feet, gevaldik. So I say, I'm lending you $300,000. I want verification. I want proof that later on, in case your Yetzirah whispers in your ear that you should not pay me back, I need proof so that the Bezin can hold you to your obligation. So that's a shtar chov. That's a sugya. Shtar chov pops up all over. Shas, in a certain sense, the fundamental sugya of shtar chov is the very end of our Masechta, Kuf Ayin Hey, end of the last parak, the end of Get Pasha. So you can lend money without a shtar. And like we said before, if you borrow money, even if no one was watching and no eidim, you do owe the money. But it's not provable. If there are eidim watching, so then if you can produce eidim, then you can prove that the loan was made. Or you can have a shtar. And a shtar has several benefits, one of which is that I don't have to locate the eidim, I just have to make sure that I don't lose the shtar. So that shtar, a shtar chov, bepashtas, I stress bepashtas, serves only as a shtar raya. Certainly, primarily as a shtar raya. You owe the money because he gave you the money. The shtar doesn't make you owe the money. You owe the money independently because of the fact that the loan was made. The shtar serves subsequently to prove the loan was made and to prove all the details. How much was loaned and when it's due and so on and so forth. The shtar may have other features also in terms of shibud, but primarily, if not exclusively, it is a shtar raya only. So you can have something that serves only as a shtar raya, or something that just really serves as a shtar kinyan, and then you can have something that's meant to be both. Okay. So with that in mind...
I just want to... The clock's 10 minutes behind. Just so...
Okay, thank you. It's good to know. Yeah. Jose, one final question. So Yonah's pointing out this thinking about Kinyan and Raya does take us back to the opening Ritva in the Parak, where we saw that there are two different things called Chazakah, two entirely unrelated activities and have unrelated functions, but confusingly we both call them Chazakah and they both operate on Karka. One is Chesed Gimel Shanim, where you use the Karka for 3 years and that's proof that you previously bought it. And the other is Kinyan Chazaka, where you do a momentary improvement to the karka, a momentary renovation to the karka, momentary renovation. How about that? Momentary renovations. That'd be nice, right? You do a momentary tikkun to the karka, and that makes it yours. So again, both Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Elazar agree that sometimes there are things that makes things happen, and sometimes there are things that prove that things happen. And the question is... Are there two different shtaros, as by chazaka? Are there somewhat analogously two different types of shtar? One proves and one makes, shtar raya, shtar kinyan, or that the Rebbe Elazar says, no. In the context of chazaka, different. In the context of a shtar, making it happen happens with that which can prove that it happened. Okay, but now let's take it back, Rabbi Yisrael. Suicide down. Why are we getting involved in the world of Eidah Chazim Yikarasi, Eidah Musir Yikarasi? Number one, because it's part of Torah. There are many parts of Torah. But this is a part of Torah that's relevant. We should learn all of Torah, but we can't learn all of Torah simultaneously. So we'll get to many things. We'll get to many, many, many things later. But this is main yana right now. This is main yana right now. Why? Because our Gemara in Bava Basra, Lamedal Lamedhei, had attacked Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman, you have a case of no one is a mukzah, and you said the answer is kol da'al gvar. Sounds like whoever's stronger wins. To figure that one out, Mitch Blinetter tomorrow will begin to The next Bava Basra she'll begin to dig into Kol Da'am Gvar. But whatever Kol Da'am Gvar means, it does not mean Yachloku, and it does not mean Shuda Dedaini. It's neither a 50-50 split, nor is it a judge's discretion. And the question is, well, why? Rav Nachman, why is your case any different than Shnei Shtar Tayosim Amechad? Wherein Rav had said Yachloku, and Shmuel had said Shuda Dedaini. And you're saying Kol Da'am Gvar. What gives? To which Rav Nachman responds, or some later Amora, defender Rav Nachman, responds, Lamehem and Aleph. you're right, but the answer is that over there the Shnei Shtaris is a very different case, sort of case, than this, the Hu Arba, the Zemer Shavos. Why? Why is it so different? So the key distinction is, the Gemara said, well, it depends whether we still anticipate more evidence coming in, or is the discovery process ended, and we think we have all the data we're going to get. The Shnei Shtaris, we don't anticipate getting more data. Rabbi Yonuk works through exactly why. And we don't anticipate, L'chora, everything's here. We have the Shtaris, presumably we already looked for Ede Mesira, and there's a finite number, there's a closed set of who can even prove. The only people who have evidence are people who were there at the time of one of those two Shtaros. Mesira Shtar number one, Mesira Shtar number two. And we know who those people are. Presumably the parties to the case already tracked down all the relevant people, and they discovered either that they don't remember, or that they're no longer with us, or they're not available. But most likely, we're done with evidence. But Zer Mashal Vosai is wide open. Who can prove whether my grandfather, your grandfather, owned this boat, lived in this piece of land? I have no idea. It could be anybody. I don't know who visited my father, my grandfather on this piece of land 20 years ago, 30 years ago. That's a very wide open set of people. So Zerma Shalvosai, the case is that the data collection is not yet done. Discovery is not yet done. So maybe we say Kol Da'am Gvar. Over here the Gemara says, here we say we're done. Lekala mekam la demil. So we do not anticipate any further evidence. We don't anticipate any further data. It is what it is. Here are the facts, and now we have to give a psak. So meila, we don't just say kal dangar. We give an actual psak. That's what the Gemara appears to say. Now, take a look at the top Tosfos on Lamed Hey Amud Aleph. Tosis is trying to figure out, ostensibly, Tosis is trying to figure out what exactly is the Gemara's kasha. Is the Gemara saying that Rav Nachman should say Yachloku like Rav? Is the Gemara saying that Rav Nachman said Shuda Dedaini like Shmuel? That's Tosis kasha, and there's another subtle point lurking beneath. Lahu Lishna Tapalav and Heyman Al. That approach in the Gemara, in Ksubis, Perek Mishana Nasoi, Dafsari Dao. That approach that says the time of the Rav Mishum to suffer Krabi Meir, and the reason, the rationale for Rav saying Achloku, is because it's like Rabbi Meir looking at the board. This is the Gemara charted. The Gemara Ksubis charted. The Gemara initially had said the Machloku is Rav and Shmuel, is really Machloku is Rabbi Meir Belazar. The Gemara said there should be another Nafkamina. The Gemara Nishi, that having the Gemara Ksubas is another Nafkamina in the chart of Nafkaminas, Mayor Blazer, is what do you do when you have Shnei Shtaros? B'yom Echad. The Gemara had said, if you hold like your mayor, so the answer is Yachok. If you hold like Rabbi Blazer, then the answer is going to be Shuda the Daini. Why does that follow? So Tosis fills us in. Take a look in Tosis. Time of the Rav, the first lashon in the Gemara. The time of the Rav Mishum Desavrika Meir. The rationale of Rav is why? Because he says Yachloku because Hilzak Meir said Eide Chasim Akarsi, and therefore Ulakach Yachloku, and that's why Yachloku Afilu Ika Eide Mesira Shanim Zala Echad Kodem. Even if it's not a suffake, even if unlike the case of Rav and Shmuel. Let's say Tosa says, we do know which one got it in the 10 o'clock in the morning and which one got it at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. They both have the same date, and the time doesn't appear in the star, but the Edim were there, and the Edim remember, the Edim of the star, the Reuven guy, said, yeah, it was 10 o'clock in the morning. Remember, we had just come back from a late shachas, we grabbed some breakfast, and we came straight to the Mesirah Shashara to Reuven. And the other group says, no, we had a long business lunch, and then we chapped mincha, and then 3 o'clock in the afternoon, we came to the lawyer's office, and Shimon got his star. So it's very clear, and maybe, or maybe even Reuven and Shimon both say free. Shimon says, yeah, mine was in the afternoon, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Hodos Baldin says Tosis, but if you hold like Rav Meir, so then what's the din? Yachloku, why? But we all know that Reuven got a star before Shimon. So why is Shimon have a stake in the karka? Kevin the Mitocha Chasima says Tosis, the last wide line. You're right that the Eidei Mesirah tell us Reuven got a star at 10 o'clock in the morning, Shimon got a star at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, but the star itself doesn't tell me that. And therefore, because outside Yerushalayim, the minig was to only write the date and not the time. Outside Yerushalayim, they didn't write shows. It doesn't matter. Really, in other words, what Tosis is saying is that if you hold Edi Chasima Karsi, even it's not a question of a suffix. I don't know which star came first. The din is Yachloku b'Toras Vadai. It is for sure Yachloku. And he goes on to quote the Mishnah in the third paragraph, beginning of the third paragraph of Gittin. Kedemuch Reish Kol Aget. Kol Aget is the third paragraph of Gittin. What does the Mishnah say? The Mishnah is talking there about the din of Lishma. A husband is married to two wives, which is already sort of a hard concept for us to even intuit or understand. And it's a wrenching case to even read. He was planning to divorce the Gedola, the taller wife, the older wife. And then he commissioned the sofer to write a star with the intent he was going to give it to the Gedola. And then he decides, instead he's going to divorce the Ketana. Painful to even read. Well, the Gar divorced the Ketana. Mishnah says, it's not valid. You can't repurpose the Shtar to instead give it to the Ketana. Obviously, talk about a scenario where they both have the same name. The fellow is married to two women. Both are named Shpritzer Genendel. The Shpritzer Genendel the older, and Shpritzer Genendel the younger. Trying to avoid a name that would be of anyone that you know. So he originally had the sofer wrote that Chaim ben Meir is divorcing Shpritzer Genendel Bas Nachman, and he originally intended to give it to the older Shpritzer Genendel. And then he had a change of heart, and instead he wants to give it to the younger wife, who's also Shpritzer Genendel Bas someone else named Nachman. So the Mishnah says you can't repurpose it. The Diag, and the Gemara is Medayag, you can't repurpose it because of the lack of Lishma. It has to be written Lishem. Lishma includes for this particular husband, for this particular wife. So if the sofer didn't write Lishem HaKetana, it would not be kosher to be used for the Ketana. But the Gemara is Medayag, the Ketana is a problem because of the lack of Lishma. But HaGadola Matzim Megarish Bey. If he wrote it l'shem ha'gedola, he could give it to the gedola. Umuki la be'edim misira belaza. The Gemara says, really, that's a star. That's not muchach mitocha. Right? It's not clear. It's not 100% clear which he has two wives, uncannily with the same name. Both are named Shpritzer Genendel Bas Nachman. So the implication of the Mishnah is that the fact that there's an ambiguity does not in of itself possible the get. Just have to avoid any issues of Shalom Lishma. And the Gemara says, that's the Belazer. Eidim Asirikas. But Rav Meir, Afilu Gedola Matzim Megarish. For Rav Meir, that's not a valid get at all. Afal Gav de Ike Eidim Asira. Even though the husband's going to give it to the Gedola, and there'll be Eidim watching, they see to whom he's giving it. Doesn't matter. According to Rav Meir, it's not valid. Kevin de ein nikar mitoch edei chasima. It's not clear from the edei chasima which wife is being referred to. So again, we understand well what that means based on the Rav's presentation. As you read the sentence the first, what I mean, it's not nikar from the edei chasima. Edei chasima signed it before. What does that even mean? No, the end. What Tosis is driving at is the shtar itself is not a self-contained raya, that this husband was divorcing this wife because there's ambiguity. It says Shmuel and Bas Nachman, but this fellow has two wives named Shmuel and Bas Nachman. You should write Shmuel and Bas Nachman Bas Reuven, maybe Ben Reuven. The other one maybe is Shmuel and Bas Nachman Ben Yehuda. But if it's not Nikar, so that's a problem with the quality, the effectiveness of the shtar to do the kinyan. Oh. So Tosis says, so by that logic, in this, it says, Tosis, that's what the Gemara and Ksubas meant, that in the first stage. Stage one of the Gemara, and which appears to also be the Maskana, Gemara seems to ultimately circle back to saying, well, we know Rav holds like Rav Meir. But in stage one of the Gemara was stressing the basis of Rav is Rabbi Meir. So what that means is that it's Bevada Yachloku. It's not Yachloku Misafik. We're not sure whose it is. We're not sure who got it first. So Momen Amutu Besafik. No. It is Yachloku. They both have equal stake in it. Because he gave them each a shtar kinyan, and they're, even though one was given before the other, but the shtar, the first shtar doesn't indicate that, and therefore they are equally effective. And there's somehow, it ends up being two simultaneous, parallel kinyanim. So they end up being, Reuven and Shimon end up being shutfim in this field. In truth, shutfim. It's not that we don't know and therefore we resort to let's solve this, respond to the suffix by saying Yachlo, but no! In stage one of the Gemara, that's the din. As a matter of fact, he says, and that's why number one, Nafkimi number one in that is even if we know who was Baboka and who was Achar Tzara, it doesn't matter. And number two, Tosa says, here's another Nafkimina. Avalim Kona, the last narrow line. We're talking about where you gave it as a gift. Or it was a sale, but the kinyan they're using was a kinyan shtar. You're going to pay later, or paying earlier, but the kinyan was a kinyan shtar. Tosa says, according to the first stage of the Gemara, the yachloku of Rav is only when it's a shtar, when they were shtar in kinyan. But, Aval im Kona bekesav abachazaka bachalipin. But if there was some other kinyan that actually created the transfer, the conveyance of ownership, there was kesef, or there was chazaka, or there was chalipin, a kinyan sudar, the ein hashtar omed ela l'raya. Now we know what this means. If there was some other kinyan, then we just subsequently, like we said before, hashtar chol. You could say, if we did a kinyan on karka, I could say, you know, I already paid you, or we did a kinyan chazaka, but I'd like to have a shtar to subsequently prove that the karka is mine. So we could have a shtar raya on the mechira. So it says Tosis, so what would be the din then? What would Rav say? Yeah, so then Rav wouldn't say yachaloku. Why? Because then the kinyan had, the facts were created through the mesiras hakesef. Whoever gave the kesef first bought the karka. End of story. The shtar is just an afterthought. The shtar is a raya. Now, it may be an unhelpful raya. If two shtars both have the same date, so I'm not going to know who bought it first. I won't know who actually bought it. Then Modarav, if it's merely a shtar, then Modarav, Damrin, and Shuda. Then according to the Havmina and Maskana, the stage one of the Gemara, the Rav would say, then you do say Shuda. Why? It's not necessary for the shtar to be clear since it's only a raya. Now, Tosfos doesn't really mean that literally. Of course, it's necessary for the shtar to be clear in order to serve as a raya. but it's not necessary for the shtar to be clear in order to create the kinyan, because this is merely a shtar rise, not a shtar kinyan. So we don't know who bought it first, so we're mesupik, so we're going to have to say shuda the daini, but fundamentally it really belongs to one person. So Tosa says, now that we, you and I, understand something about Reb Lezer of Meir, we're therefore able to, stage two, understand the Gemara's attempt, maybe successful attempt, to be Tola Rav on Reb Meir. And Tosa says, if you're Tola Rav on Reb Meir, what that means is the din of Shtei Shtaris is Bevada Yachlo. Bevada Yachloku. Which means, number one, Afilu Yodim Mi Kodem, the din is still Yachloku. And number two, if they're only Shtari Raya, then we would say Shuda. Oh, fascinating. Two nafkaminas in the fact that in stage one of the Gemara, Reb Meir is saying, Yachloku b'taras vada. Yachloku is not a way of dealing with a suffix. It's just, that's the din. If we're shutfim, then yachloku. If you and I are partners in the business, so then if we want to dissolve it, yachloku. Why? Because we're suffix? No, because those are the facts. It is half yours and half mine. So that's what Tosis is saying. According to first stage, you're going to have to appreciate that then the Yachlok is Bataras Vada. Nafki number one, even if you know who came first, it doesn't matter. Nafki number two, if the Shtar is only a Shtar Raya, we would not say Yachloku. And Nafki number three, says Tosis, is, also Lashem Lo Parich Me Rav Hacha. According to that, what's the Kash in our Gemara? Rav Nachman should have said what? Not Yachloku. Why would he say Yachloku? Yachloku is not a means of dealing with a suffix. Tosa says, if you take the first lashon of the Gemara, Rav is saying Bataras Vada Yachloku. So then the Gemara wasn't saying Rav Nachman should say Yachloku. Why Rav Nachman say Yachloku? It's irrelevant. Hasam bedinu shal shneyem. Kevin de v'yamecha nechtemu. That Gemara in Ksubas, according to Rav, it does indeed belong to both of them. Bevadai. They are both, for sure, entitled to 50% of the karga. Elami Shmuel Parech. According to stage one of the Gemara, says Tosis, the kasha is only from Shmuel. In other words, from Shuda. As Tosis just said, even Rav agrees if it really is a suffix, in the Havamina, we would say Shuda the Daini. If it was really King and Kesef, we're not sure which King and Kesef happened first. Shuda the Daini. So if you're working with this stage of the Gemara, and the kasha is from Nachman, why don't you say Shuda? Not why don't you say Yachlok? Okay. Why does this matter so much? Okay, it's interesting. On the stamp shot in the Gemara. And maybe it has some a further consequence also. And here comes the punch. You ready? Here's the punch. According to the first stage of the Gemara, the kasha cannot be from Yachloku because Yachloku is not a Torah Sasvekis issue. Yachloku is just the Metzias. It is 50-50. So that means the kasha of Nachman must be from Shmuel. From Shmuel said what? Shuda the Daini. So now Tosu, whoa, hold on a second. Let's think about that. Is that a valid kasha of Nachman? Now we're mamish back in Bava Vasra. Lama Dalamay. Is that a valid kasha of Nachman? Think about the case. Zemar Shal Vosei, Shal Vosei. You can say Shuda the Daini. Could you say Shuda the Daini? Could you? So Tosa says, well, here we come back to where we started. And here's the teeth. Here's what Tosa is really getting at with their analysis of Ksubas, is for the following point. What does Shuda mean? Rabbeinu Tam Rashi. Boom! He said, Tosa says, 1 second. According to this first lashon of the Gemara, the kasha is only from Shuda the Daini. It's not from Yachloku. Yachloku doesn't have to do with suffix. But Shuda the Daini, you mean to tell him that Shuda the Daini could have been applied to Rav Nachman. It's a valid kasha. Why didn't you say Shuda the Daini? Could we say Shuda the Daini? What does Shuda the Daini mean? So he says, well, according to Rabbeinu Tam, the Shuda the Daini means it's just judicial whim. Just say something, pick someone, whoever. You don't have to give your, most likely the Daini is going to try to figure out what what's logical, what makes sense, what seems fair, but he doesn't have to give his explanation. And perhaps, I think we talked about it last time, maybe that's if the goal of Shuddha Dedaini is Darkei Shalom, one could make the argument that you'll have more successful Darkei Shalom if you just say a psak without a reason. Once you say, well, because I think it's probably his, it's going to lead to endless machol. Well, I don't think, no, but look at this. So Rabbi Tam says, just say, you just make dying, you make the call based on Hefker, based on Hefker. You think this is the best call of the situation, the Zehu. You don't have to give any grounds. You're not working Midin Rov, according to Rabbi Tam. It's just judicial fiat. This is a Mokam Tzorech, where Hefker, based on Hefker is called for. Whatever the dying says goes. See, if you say Rabbi Tam, so that is universally applicable. Any case, in theory, could have Shuddha Dedaini. The dying says. Doesn't matter. Assuming it's appropriate, say Shuddha Dedaini. Any case can yield to Shuddha Dedaini, fundamentally. Asi Shapir Dahachanami Bezel Mashal Vosa Shayach Shuddha Dedaini. The dying will say, you say it's your parents, you say it's your parents. The dying will say X. He'll say Reuven, he'll say Shimon. Whatever he says, he says. It was a valid question. Again, the Gemara ultimately answers the Shuddha Dedaini is not appropriate there because Ikla Mekla Demilsa, there may still be more evidence coming in. We're not going to say Shuddha Dedaini. Fine. But the Kasha is a valid Kasha. We could have met, what would it look like to say Shuddha Dedaini? Simple. The Dain would have picked one, either Reuven or Shimon, and named him as the new owner of the Karka. But the problem is, according to Rashi and Rashbam, Avil Apirish HaKuntres, Shemifari Shuddha, L'mishin Nir, L'dain Shaya Ovo Yoseh. Rashi said, no! Rashi had said Shuddha Dedaini means you have to assess, you have to make an educated guess. I don't have absolute proof, but I'm going to try to figure out who was this Nosin more likely to have given the karka to. So that works if the suffix is V'das HaNosin. In Shtei Shtaros, there was one giver, there was a Marakama, and we're not sure was he giving the karka to Reuven or to Shimon. So that there's an interesting question that we can try to make an educated guess about. Is it more likely that the Marakama would have wanted to give it to Reuven and shaft Shimon? Or is the Marakama more likely to want to give it to Shimon and shaft Reuven? The Marakama is clearly, as they said yesterday, the Marakama was not the finest fellow, to put it mildly. Certainly, if he gave a matana to two people, certainly if he sold the same karka to two people, clearly not an honest person. Okay, so let's try to get inside his head. Who was he trying to mess over? And who was his friend that he was trying to give something to? Okay. So there's room for Shuddha Dedaini analysis. For Rashi, Shuddha Dedaini is not just fiat, not just a call, it's analysis. So in Shnei Shtaros, there's what to analyze. Let's try to get inside the head of the Marakama, and what was he probably intending? Okay, so there's what to talk about. It says, Tosis, but how about Zemer Shavosai? How about Zemer Shavosai? Right, there's no Marakama. Either it used to belong to Reuven's parents, or it used to belong to Shimon's parents. So how am I supposed to figure that one out? Where's the analysis? That's what Tosfos says. According to Benu Tam, it's a good kasha. According to Tam, you should say Shuddha Dedaini. Say, pick someone. But according to Rashi, Shuddha Dedaini means analysis, psychoanalyze. Psychoanalyze who? Psychoanalyze what? So Tosfos, and now, by the way, you see the elegance, Tosfos. It's very subtle. You'll chazer Tosfos after it. He put all the pieces, he laid out all the pieces, and then he claps his hands and he has a solid kasha. Because he said, at first we learned this Tais, it seems like it's sort of like, oh, like a bunch of disconnected pieces. But Tais says, take it to Ksubis, and he's telling, take it to the Shaka Vitaria, Epizahar, about the Chsima Karsi, the Mesira Karsi, Gidin, what's going on? And then he starts talking about Rabbi Tam and Rashi. At first we learned this Tais, it's so confusing. And it seems like it's like a scattering, of like a salad of like a bunch of different bits and pieces. But now you'll chazer, you'll see. Elegant. It's elegant. Because Tosfos just set up is a process of elimination. They said, it becomes clear that the point of Tosfos Meirosh was really Rashi Ben Tam. Even though this appears earlier than Dimas Shuddha Dedaini, this was all, this whole Tosfos is a single kasha on Rashi. A Raya to Ben Tam. But it requires several steps. That's often, as we have seen, it's often the case in learning. You need a lot of hagdamas in order to get to the point. Okay, so Tosfos, but all Tosfos is really doing is saying the Gemara has a kasha against Rav Nachman. According to Rashi, there is no kasha. Because either the kasha is from he should have said Yachloku, or the kasha should have said Shudidaini, or both. But I'll show you, says Tosis, that according to Rashi, it's neither. Because it, in the first stage of the Gemara, it can't the kasha not from Yachloku. And according to Rashi, Pshat and Shudidaini, the kasha can't be from Shudidaini, because analysis is not relevant in Zeh Mashal Vosai. So Tosis says, whoa. Process of elimination. What's the kasha according to Rashi? Nothing. We're not going to ask Rav Nachman. You should have said Yachloku. No, Yachloku has to do with a Batoris Vaday. That's not relevant here. You're not going to say Shuda Didaini according to Rashi. How would you say Shuda Didaini? There's a simple answer. Yeah, I can make him Nachman. The answer is simple. By Shay Star says what to analyze over here. Of course, don't say Shuda Didaini. What's he supposed to analyze? So according to Rashi, the whole kasha falls apart. We eliminate option number one in the kasha. Based on understanding Eichzim Akarsi, we eliminate option number two in the Kasha based on Rashi's approach to Shudah Didaini. The Tosa says, boom! That's the problem with Rashi. How's Rashi mefarnes the Gemara? How's Rashi understand the Gemara's Kasha? What's going on? According to Beitam, Kishmak. According to Beitam, the Kasha is for Shudah Didaini. Givaldik. It happens to be from both Rav and Shmuel. Both Rav and Shmuel hold Shudah Didaini over there, if this is a Safik. And that was the question. Rav Nachman, why not say Shudah Didaini? Oh! So that, now the whole Tosis, everything falls into place with extraordinary elegance. You'll chaz the Tosis inside in a couple of minutes, the Beis Medrash, and the Tosis will sing. So now, in the last four lines, Tosis says, well, what can we do for Rashi? Is there any way to save Rashi? Is there any way to save Rashi? So Tosa says, well, maybe. The Yesh Lidchok, the last few lines are the, can we save Rashi? Number one, Tosa says, Yesh Lidchok ulufarish, we know it's the language. Well, you could give a Deichik Pshat, you could kvetch, Sheyidnu ha-dayan al-min nira amiti bedvarim Yosef. How would you say Shuda Didaini, Rashi Shuda Didaini, is there on Mashal Vosai? You can't really analyze who's more likely to have owned the property. Maybe fair. Which family was wealthier? Which family was more interested in this area? Or Tosas may mean figure out which, or Reuben and Shimon, who's a more honest person? Who seems like a more honest person? Okay. Lamin nira amiti bedvarim Yosef. I'm not sure what the Tosas means. Which fact pattern seems more likely, or which party seems more honest? Okay. Tosa, you could say that Shuda. It's not quite, but Tosa sees it as a docha. That's not as compelling as something that's more directly relevant. I know the Marakama gave one to two people. Who is he more likely to have given it to? Okay, Tosa doesn't, not so excited, but that's one solution, is maybe Rashi will say that the Shuda Didaini is applicable to Zeh Omer Shel Avosei. Or, Ulahu lishna d'misha hainasoi. Then Tosa says, well, there's another way of thinking about this, which is, there's another stage in the Gemara. The second stage in the Gemara in Ksubas, in Perek Misha hainasoi. Remember, the Gemara had ultimately had said, no! Rav is insane, mitam, Rav Meir. Rav is also following Rav Elazar. Everyone follows Eide Mesir Karsi. That was the second stage in the Shaka Vatari in Ksubas. Everyone's following Rav Elazar. Elamai, Rav said that they all agree Eidim Mesir Karsi, which means they all agree it's a real suffix. Because they all agree if you hold Eidim Mesir Karsi, then the moment the shtar is given, the kinyan kicks in. It doesn't matter. The kinyan is valid even if the shtar isn't proving anything. That's the whole idea of Rav Elazar's Eidim Mesir, as we saw. So the second stage of the Gemara in Ksubas, Rav and Shmuel both hold Rav Elazar. They both hold it's a real suffix. They're really, the karka belongs 100%. To whoever got the shtar first. We just don't know who got the shtar first. So it's a suffix. It's a suffix. And in the second stage of the Gemara, Rav and Shmuel both accept that it's a suffix. It's just a question of Shuda Adifa or Chaluka Adifa. What's a better way to deal with a suffix? So that the Tosa goes on to the third to last line of Tesis. Ulahu lishna d'mish ayanasi, according to the other Lashon, the other stage in the other version of the Gemara and Ksubas. The Muki pluked to the Rav and Shmuel Liv Dirbelazar, that understands that both Rav and Shmuel, they're arguing within Shitas Rav Elazar, Usvir le Rab de Chalukah Adifa. And Rab is saying Chalukah is better, mean a better way, a more ideal way of dealing with Safek. Perhaps because, as Rishonim say, Shuda is better because perhaps the right guy gets everything he's supposed to get. There's a possibility of being totally right. Possibility of being totally wrong, but Shuda has the possibility of being totally right. On the other hand, Chaluka is definitely partially right and definitely partially wrong. That's the Machlokes Rav and Shmuel. Sort of like a little bit like the difference between conservative investment and aggressive investing. Are you going for the possibility of getting it, nailing it, of the right guy gets everything he deserves, or would you rather, lower risk? Let's make sure that the right guy gets something, gets 50%. Of course, the wrong guy also gets 50%. That's the machlekes Rav and Shmuel, given this situation where there's no muchzik and very deficient data set. So, what's a better way of dealing with this imperfect situation? That's the second stage of the Gemara. That everyone holds of Eidim Asir Karasi. Everyone holds that it is a Safek, but Rav says, in a Safek, Chalukah Adifa. Well, Shmuel says, in a Safek, Shuda Adifa. Ah! So then, Tosis says,
that goes against what we said earlier, that Yafloku only is in the case of Vada.
Correct. That's the two stages in the Shaka V'Tarya. First, the Gemara and Ksubas had said that Remeir's father, Rabbi's father, Remeir, and Shmuel's father, Rabbi Elazar. And what Tosis analyzed for us is that means that the Machlokas is Rabbi and Shmuel, whether this is a Vaday or a Safik. And if it's a Vaday, then Yachloku, if it's a Safik, then Shuda. But then the Gemara goes on there to say, on Tzai Dalav Beis, no, everyone holds Rabbi Elazar. And the Shaila, meaning, let's translate, everyone holds it's a real Safik. Everyone holds it really whoever got it first wins. We don't know who got first. And this question is, being that it's a Safek, what's the best way of dealing with Safek? Shuda Adifa or Chalukah Adifa? The Tzai says, according to that Lishna, according to that other Lashon in the Gemara, stage 2 in the Gemara, that the Machlokes Rav and Shmuel is all within Rabbi Elazar, and which therefore means Tzvi'ah Leilei Rav de Chalukah Adifa. Rav is making a statement about how to deal with Safek. So then Asi Shapir, then it works out well. Works out well meaning Rashi works out well. Because then you could say, Deparech Mei Rav. Deparech Mei Rav. Or the Bach says, Afilu Mei Rav. But maybe the point isn't Afilu Mei Rav. Maybe the point is, Deparech Mei Rav. Because again, as Tosa said before, it's difficult for Rashi to say that the Kasha is Shuda D'Daini. That was Tosa's point before. That was Tosa's Shpar. That Rashi's interpretation of Shuda is not a great fit with the case of Zeh Omer Shel Avosai. That was the whole problem that drove this Tosis. It sounds like Tosis is saying that if within the first Lashon of the Gemara, which sounds like it might also be the third Lashon, perhaps, so if you understand that the Rav is based on Rabbi Meir, therefore Rav is not relevant, and Shmuel is a hard fit for Rashi Tzad and Shmuel, the Rashi is a little bit up the creek. One solution is, okay, we can madchik that Shuda does fit, Rashi Tzad and Shuda does fit, but the Rashi was, okay, min nira miti b'dvar miyosef. Alternatively, in the second Lashon, Rashi is smooth. Tosis whole kash on Rashi is on the assumption they're working in the first Lashon. Working in the first Lashon, then in Yachloku is b'taras vade, it's irrelevant to Rav Nachman. You work in the second Lashon, Yahulgu is Batara Safek, it's all Batara Safek. So then, Shmak. Then the Kasha may or may not be from Shmuel, but it's definitely from Rav. And that is Tosis' analysis of the Sugya, and that is Tosis bringing to bear. Rashi gave a pshat what Shuda means, and Tosis said, well, let's figure it out by looking at what the Gemara was called. The Gemara was called Shnei Shtaros. Let's take a look at that Sugya. Let's take a look at Rav and Shmuel. Now you see how, I told you before, ostensibly, that's how we started. Ostensibly, Tosis is raising the question of what exactly is the Tanya Gemara's Kasha? Are we asking from Rav, or are we asking from Shmuel? As I told you before, there's more teeth to this. It wasn't only a question of what's the Gemara's Kasha, which itself is a valid question to figure out. Tosis has an angle here. We want to analyze the Shaka V'Tarya for a purpose. We're analyzing the Shaka V'Tarya, that's usually the way things are. We analyze the Shaka V'Tarya is meant to serve a purpose of figuring out what the Dinim are. We analyze the Shaka V'Tarya in order to figure out, can we thereby determine what Shuda means? The Tosa says, well, it may depend on which Lashon of the Gemara you passing like. You pass like the first Lashon of the Gemara, the Rav is based on Ede Chasim Akarsi, so then it's going to be difficult to defend Rashi, Pshat, and Shuda. But if you assume that the Maskanas HaSug is like the second stage, that Rav's Yachlok with Batoras Safed, not Batoras Vada, then, according to the second Lashon of the Gemara, Rashi's approach to Shuda is very defensible. According to the second Lashon of the Gemara and Ksuvas, putting together the Gemara and Ksuvas with the Kasha of the Gemara and Bava Basra, if you assume that the Maskanas like the second Lashon, so then Rashi is safe. You assume like the Maskan is like, if you assume the Gemara is circling back ultimately to the first Lashon, so then Rashi's Pshat becomes more challenging to defend in light of how the Gemara here in Bava Basra tries to deploy the Gemara in Ksubis as a Kasha against Rav Nachman. So, Mala Madnu, we learned a lot of things. We learned a lot of pieces, and we also came to, I think, important appreciation of how we work when we learn. We learned a lot of important things. We have a new appreciation for Eidim Mesir Karzai Yechsima Karzai, a new appreciation for Kinyan Shtar, a new appreciation for Ryan Shtar Kinyan, and how all those pieces fit together. A renewed appreciation, as Yonah pointed out, for the whole notion of Kinyan versus Shtar and how they interact in different contexts. And a renewed appreciation for the nuance of what's going on between the lines of the Gemara and Ksuvas, the Tosfos and Bava Basra, Tosfos and Ksuvas also, I believe we'll talk to Bava Basra, explain to us the significance of the movement in the Shaka V'Tarya and Ksuvas. And we have a renewed appreciation for a Tosfos. That the Tosfos was not just a scattershot bits and pieces that are relevant to the Sugya, it's one shiningly elegant Kasha that required putting the ducks in a row, all the pieces are in place. The Tosfos says, now we have Rashi up again, Rashi's back into the corner. And then ultimately Tosfos says, well, maybe there could be one of two ways of trying to defend Rashi from this kasha. And we also begin to appreciate that Divrei Torah Anim Makam Echad V'Ashir Makam Acher. That looking at some other sugya, that's how Tarshu Bal Peh is built. And I thought Tosfos, one of the primary roles of Tosfos is to keep reminding us and to keep us honest that all the sugyas have to work together. That was Rabbi Tam's fundamental assumption. Rabbi Tam had thousands of chidushim, particular sugyas. But his one methodological meta chidush was to do to Shas consistently what Shas does to the Tanoim consistently, which is to assume that unless otherwise specified, different gemaras have to work together coherently. And we're not going to assume achalokas as sugyas. And we need to work all the pieces out together. And it's not a weakness to look at Ksubas to understand Bava Basra. That's the way it's supposed to work. And you're going to have to appreciate what that line in Ksubas means, Alpi, Sugis, and Gittin. And then everything comes together in a coherent system.